me, Dave. I'm going to try it.
Okay, we're going to hit. We're going to have that
sound
buzz.
Check, testing 1, 2, 3.
Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Finance Committee to order. Today is Thursday, April 30th, 2015. Time is 1:06 p.m. Members present are Representative Wilson, Kawasaki, Vice Chair Sadler, Co-Chair Thompson, myself, Co-Chair Newman, Representative Gaddis, and Representative Munoz. Representative Edgman. Representative Munoz is excused today. I expect the other members shortly. What we're going to do today is just do a high-level overview of the committee substitute for House Bill 1001 Finance. We will be asking members to prepare written questions on the items that are within the budget. We do have Representative Keto in the audience, too. Thank you. We will be asking members to have written questions that will be available for next week when we meet again so we can get more in depth into the discussion. But I wanted to make sure that members had an opportunity at least to get, you know, some initial learning curves on what we've got here in the budget, why the numbers were put into the budget, and where we're at on that. So I asked Commissioner, OMB Commissioner Pat Pitney to be here. She's got some of her folks here to help with that. Welcome, Representative Guerra. First, I want to start out, though, with PDECLIN is going to be going through the summaries, agency summaries. That's a page 1 and 2 for unrestricted general revenue, and then the numbers and language section. Representative Gaddis.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to clarify, if I'm hearing you correctly, are you saying no questions today, but rather write them for next week?
No, Representative Gaddis, you can ask questions today.
Oh, okay.
I'd like the questions to probably be direct questions, you know, if we can kind of keep them somewhat direct. But I just wanted to make sure people had the basic understanding of why the department and the governor asked for these to be in the
And if I could follow up, Mr. Chair, will administration also be available for those questions today? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Mr. Eklund, so members have their copies of the agency summaries. Go ahead, Pete.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Pete Eklund, staff to Co-Chair Newman and the Finance Committee. I was asked by the chairman to just go over the one pager that you saw, I think it was yesterday, but just to reiterate some of the numbers. As you'll remember, House Bill 1001 was introduced by the governor. It is basically makes changes, additions to the conference committee on the operating budget that the legislature passed a couple days ago. And if you look at your numbers and language, fund groups unrestricted general report, you'll see that there's two totals. One is $54,954,500. The other is $39 million. You add those two together, roughly there's about just under $94 million of new general fund, unrestricted general fund spending requested in the CS before you. And then the other report is the numbers and language all funds summary. And in all funds, the CS in front of you is $217,660,000 of new spending above the conference committee report on the operating budget that was passed by the legislature.
And as you go through those columns there in line four, you go to the agencies and it will tell you the numbers for each agency and the amounts and how they get to that total.
That is correct.
Is there a question for Mr. Eklund on that? Representative Wilson? I would like to welcome Representative Guttenberg. Welcome, David.
You're right, too.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so although this is really the difference, though, because with Medicaid expansion and a lot of negative numbers in here that of savings that the administration thinks that we may see, there's really more added into the budget than the $217,660 or the $94. Is that correct?
Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, you can see on the report, on both reports, there is, in Department of Corrections, there's a negative of just over $4 million. So that would be a savings proposed from the Medicaid expansion portion of the CS. So depending on how you look at it, yes, this is a net increase. All the numbers are netted out, and the net increase in the bill is $217,660,000 of all fund sources.
Right. So, Mr. Chair, my point is that I just want to make sure that when someone sees this document and believes that there may be 94, yes, there is 94 million of new funds additional over, but there's a lot other new numbers in here. They just don't show up because of the Medicaid expansion decrease in it. So I guess it would have been easier for me if we could have seen all the increases and then the decrease. I just want to make sure there is a difference.
We're going to get further and much more in-depth into the Medicaid discussion later next week. Right now, where Representative Thompson is going to take that one over, that part of the budget, and delve into the Medicaid issues in much more depth next week.
I have one other question. It's probably for you, Mr. Chair. So although the CS only shows the increases, is it your intent that we won't look at the entire budget at ways that things could be changed out, or are we only going to be looking at whether or not we approve of the increases?
Representative Wilson, right now we're working off of the committee substitute, which is the differences between the conference committee report that was passed in the House and what the governor suggested in his new bill that was submitted to us.
Okay, I just want to make sure. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, can I clarify one of the earlier questions from Representative Wilson?
Sure.
I don't have a copy of the bill in front of me, but I think it's Section 5 of the bill is the Medicaid. It's either 4 or 5 is the Medicaid expansion section of the bill. And in that, you will see negatives and positives for different appropriations. So the negative portions would be where they believe they would have savings.
Thank you.
Right. Representative Gere, I think, was first. Excuse me, Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Pete, keep it as short as possible. At the bottom, you have what are called non-additive items, and it's called
what fund page transfer. Are you on?
Oh, on this last. On this detail. Sorry, on the first page.
Page, okay. We have the unrestricted and then numbers and language.
Right. And Pete, why are fund transfers that are called non-additive, why are they added on top of the $54 million? Just let me know what that is.
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, because it's non-additive in the sense the way that Ledge Finance tracks inflows and outflows from the public education fund, but it would be counted as $39 million of new general fund spending going to the public education fund. So it's $39 million more UGF spending that would either have to come from the CBR or some source to be appropriated into the public education fund. So it's new spending of general funds to the public education fund.
So it's new general fund, but before was it other state spending? So it's a transfer from other state spending or DGF to UGF? Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, in the conference committee report, and you'll see on page 15 of the bill, the fund transfer section, section 7, the CS would transfer $118 million from the in-state natural gas pipeline fund to the public education fund. That is a decrease from that funding source. In the conference committee report, the conference committee report transferred $157 million from the in-state natural gas pipeline fund. So that difference is made up by general funds.
118 plus the 39.
Just so I totally understand, Mr. Chair. So it's spending $39 million less of money from the gas line fund and instead spending 39 more of general funds. Is that correct?
Through the chair, basically, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Some of my questions have been answered, but I think the bigger question, I'm just really trying to wrap my head around. So, you know, certainly we're challenged with coming up with a compromise with the minority, and I'm not entirely sure. I guess this is the governor's working with the minority, and is this why we have a CS and we're only looking at this, or why wouldn't we look at the conference numbers? I'm really trying to figure out why we're going here as we continue to try to pass a budget and compromise. I'm just not really following the line of thought.
The governor's bill, these are the differences. This is what the governor introduced. These are the differences between what the conference committee report was finalized at and what the governor introduced in his new version, which would have been House Bill 1001. So we did a committee substitute that identified just the differences between those two, which is what the governor had put in his bill and asked for. So we're not going outside of what the governor originally asked for in his original bill. We're working on the differences.
Brief objection, Mr. Chair. Just
my understanding. Representative Garrett, did you have a question?
You don't use the mic, please.
Sure. I'll frame it in a question. The governor did not work with us on this bill, so this is not a minority and governor bill. I can tell you he didn't work with me. So,
yeah. So, I understand your question why you did that. There was a lot of questions, and we can ask that of Ms. Pitney when she comes up of why these items were put into the budget.
Okay.
That was a question I already had of her, so she's prepared for that. Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Eklund?
Yep.
Thank you, Ms. Pitney. Did you have one down?
Certainly a question. I'm not sure if it's for Mr. Eklund or not, but so just for the public listening so we're assuming that House Bill 72, as passed by the House and Senate, is going to become law, and the changes we'll consider for changing that. So is that the assumption?
Correct. We'll either accept, amend, or deny, whatever, just like we do with every other budget. Ms. Pitney?
Mr. Chair,
President Guess.
I'm still struggling with, I'm not sure what we're doing, and I don't mean it that way, but I think that if you could say it to me a different way so, you know, I can gather. What I think I heard you saying, please correct me, is this particular CS will change, will put in, will put out, will do what we do, have done here in finance, and add this to House Bill 72 to continue. Is that what we're doing here?
Representative Gaddis, basically, yes. The governor requested House Bill 101, which had differences that had additions, which put in money for Medicaid and things like that. And so we introduced a committee substitute that had those differences. It was a lot cleaner notion than what the governor really had, so it's easier to understand. And we will work on those differences that were introduced by the governor through his bill.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess, and for the public, I mean, we just got this a day or so ago. We haven't had any meetings behind closed doors or anything, so it's relatively new to me as well as far as what we're doing. So just to reiterate again, this is a CS that we will be working on, and then we're going to take these numbers and we'll work with the conference committee version that we accepted and add or subtract
all the other budget items.
I get it. Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
All the other budget items that we've already been through and discussed and passed and moved.
And I may kick off the questions to Ms. Pitney. I just want to find out if there's been any kind of agreement.
Let's get to Ms. Pitney and get her introduced, okay?
Certainly. I can ask my question. You can put herself the record, or she can put herself the record, then I can ask my question.
Number one.
Whichever your preference is.
Sadler. So I'd like to first now, since we're done with the thank you, Representative Mr. Eklund. Pat Pitney, Director of OMB, is going to go through budget committee substitute that we have in front of us. And what I'd like to do is she has some different departments in here. I just gave her a call here, you know, within the last hour and asked her to get here. So she's going to do her best where she has to fill in. She's got some assistance for some of these. I see we got some of the commissioners came in. But what I'd like to do is just go through each department. Through the Department of Education, Department of Social Services, and ask questions in each one of those as opposed to jumping around through the whole budget as we go along. We did have a request from the from Sheldon Fisher, Commissioner of the Department of Administration, to work on the contracts first, so he'll be able to discuss that. But first I'd like to have Pat here. Pat Pitney, introduce yourself, and then Representative Sadler is waiting in the wings for a question.
So through the chair, or not through the chair, for the record, my name is Pat Pitney. I'm the budget director for the Walker administration, and I actually would like to make a couple overview comments, if
sure.
It'd be okay. So first, I really sincerely appreciate the work that Ledge Finance did and Representative Newman's staff, Pete Eklund and Joan Brown, in developing the CS. That was, it's a much simpler approach to this whole process, and it represents exactly what were the changes that we presented with the CS, that or the bill we put out. The intent of that new budget was to keep people at the table talking. The changes in the budget reflect exactly the governor's priorities. Yes, it is above what the conference committee accepted. You can speak with the minority; it's well below what they were requesting. It follows the governor's key priorities in terms of education, in terms of Medicaid expansion, and adjusting for those things that are just that were cut just too far and would have substantial impact on the operation. So these are the governor's priorities, but it is a document to get the parties together at the table to get a funded budget. That is, and it now becomes the discussion document for this body so that we can get through to a funded budget. The administration is very flexible to whatever the differences are that gets us to a funded budget. That's our goal. We aren't bought into this, and this is it, but it was to create the conversation. So I appreciate the good faith effort that this body has done to begin that conversation and the dialogue that what happened here yesterday. With that, because I can take the question now, but also because Commissioner Sheldon Fisher has another commitment at 1:30, what I thought I would do, if it's okay, is after this initial question, is if we could start on page 3 and 4 and just hit one of the differences, if that's okay.
Certainly, I can wait.
Representative Gaddis.
And thank you. And this is to your statement and kind of what we've been talking about. And maybe it's just me just being a little bit slow today. But what I think I'm hearing you say is that this creates a conversation, and the governor's point was to put some stuff together and hopefully see where we can do things a little bit differently. But I didn't hear you say that this is the only thing on the table. And I'm just trying to determine, is this CS the only thing on the table, or is everything on the table? And I guess I'm asking my co-chair and administrator. Sorry, I'm really not.
Representative Gaddis, what this is I believe Ms. Pitney said that this is basically the same version as what the governor introduced, but in a simpler form. And so the governor introduced a piece of legislation for us to work on. That's the CS, and that's what we're working on.
And, Mr. Chair, I think I'm going to be quiet and listen, and maybe I'll get it a little bit better. Thank you.
Okay, Mr. Fisher.
So one of the changes in this revised version was a request to leave the funding and the language in for bargaining units, and we did that to not to treat union and non-union differently, but it was to have the ability for good faith contract negotiation, understanding the non-unions would not receive pay raises, that we could go into negotiations as soon as possible to request concessions, but have it as a negotiation rather than a contract break. And so with that, I want to turn it over to Sheldon Fisher to talk a little bit about the impact of the contract issue.
So members, we're starting in on the section that's line 32, page 3, and continues on with the rest of page 4. Mr. Fisher.
My name is Sheldon Fisher. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Administration. And just to briefly follow up on what Ms. Pitney has highlighted, we do believe that we intend to fully negotiate aggressively as these contracts become up for negotiations. And, in fact, we're in the process right now of negotiating for about 1,700 of our employees. And we've got another 10,500 that will be up in the coming year. So well over half of our employees will be in negotiation the next 12 months. But we felt like going into those negotiations, it was important for us to honor our contracts and the commitments that we've made. And so based on that principle, the governor has recommended that we fund the COLAs and keep the language that allows us to pay the COLAs.
So, Commissioner, obviously, you know, I'll be the first one here to say, you'll probably hear it several times, that we have a huge deficit. There was a very passionate discussions that went on the floor debate about this and whether we, you know, support or do support. I believe everybody in this building, working in this building, supports our employees, our state employees. And but at a time when we are facing such huge deficits because of the drop in oil, which reduced our revenue to the state by more than 50%, 60%. The body had passed legislation that denied a pay increases for all state employees, both union and non-union. What we're seeing here in the governor's version is to ask that the union employees within the state of Alaska go back and get a increase that was negotiated, I believe, 3 years ago, for a 2.5% increase for unionized state employees. And I think that that probably puts it in place where a lot of the questions that we may have had. So when we look at input and output, and that's kind of how I try and measure things, and I've asked Ms. Pitney about this, we're getting $35 million more per year that will be added into the budget for increases. Why are we doing that, and why is it so important when we have such huge deficits?
We certainly, I think all of us in the administration, certainly have an appreciation for the challenges. As I mentioned a moment ago, we think it's appropriate for us to negotiate a new salary schedule as those contracts come due. But we're asking that the contracts that have been signed previously, and it's we are on a cycle, so every year there's some contracts that are being negotiated. We're asking that the commitments that have been made, that we honor them out of a matter of good faith and just in order to maintain a sense of good faith with the bargaining units. There are many times where we will ask bargaining units to forego a COLA during a particular year, and we'll negotiate with them. For example, maybe they'll have zero, and then where they get no COLAs for a couple of years, and then they get a COLA. And so in order to maintain a sense of that the bargaining units can rely on the representations we make, we think it's important that we honor the contracts that are signed.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And I would like to welcome Representative Ortiz. I think, and then Representative Tilton just left for a minute. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Two questions, actually, Mr. Fisher. First, what legal effects might there be of giving the represented state workers their COLA and denying it to the non-represented?
Each group is under a different structure. And so I don't believe there is a legal liability to the state associated with funding a bargaining unit COLA and not funding the COLA for exempt or partially exempt employees.
Okay. Second question. What about the moral effects? We have a situation where we've negotiated, we've come up with a bill that denies that increase to both represented and non-represented. The action the governor would take would deny the exempt people, but give that increase to the union people. I often hear about the morale of state workers and how not giving them an increase will hurt their morale and reduce their productivity. Do you expect there to be no effect on the morale of the exempt employees?
Through the chair, I think that we work quite hard over the long term to be fair across both bargaining units and non-bargaining units. And so I think I can show you, I'm not prepared with the numbers now, but I think I can show you how over time those differences have evened out, and we have not always treated the two groups identical on a year-to-year basis. But on a long-term basis, I think we have been generally fair to both, and it's certainly our intention in this process that we're going through now and in the years to come to continue to treat both groups fair and equitably.
So if I can interpret your answer, thank you, follow-up, it's that you propose to give an increase to union workers, and you're going to give an increase to the exempt workers again at some point. Is that correct?
Through the chair, the way I see it is, yes, we're asking to honor these contracts that have been given. There are some of our exempt employees, just as an example, and these are examples, but some of our exempt employees got COLAs in years where the unions did not, where the bargained units did not get COLAs. And so I think that if you look at any particular year, you will see differences between the two groups. And what I'm suggesting is if you look over the long term, you'll see a lot of consistency. And I think we have historically and intend to continue to provide, to be fair to both groups.
Just to clarify, you intend to be fair. You do intend to give a raise to exempt employees. Is that correct?
Through the chair.
Not historically.
Well,
what you plan and will do going forward.
I'm not prepared to say whether we're going to or not.
Okay. So then let me follow up the next question. So what about morale for the exempt employees?
Ms. Pitney would like to make a comment.
Actually, sir, I'd appreciate if you could answer that question. About the morale of the exempt employees who will not get a raise, but at some indeterminate time in the future.
Through the chair, I think that employees generally understand the challenge we're in. I think that the non-represented employees have seen the way they've been treated in the past, and I think that all of the groups are going to be under a certain amount of stress as we go through layoffs. And as we go through budget cuts throughout the organization, which is going to challenge our employees, and I don't deny that. But I've worked in other environments that where there is both bargained units and non-bargained units, and I don't think that the proposal we're making today will have a dramatic impact on morale above and beyond the stressful environment in which we we're operating.
We're going to have much more in-depth information. Representative Thompson and I have already started discussions with Ms. Pitney and the commissioners. Commissioner Fisher is working on some presentations on salary adjustments, where they've gone, pay increases, step increases. So we all just got this here a couple of days ago. And so there's a lot of questions and a lot more information that's going to be presented. So what I'd like to do today is we do have a time limit, is if we can kind of keep direct questions more at a higher level for information gathering so that we can have written questions that we can submit to them so that they prepared for that next week to even have further information that they can present to us if you need information, what you may think. But we do have some limited time limits on us today, so if we can just stay at that level for now. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm just trying to understand what you're saying, and we do have the option of just decreasing the budget more by that and letting the departments determine, you know, who they keep and who they don't, and this was our way of trying to spread it out so that more employees could stay. So I want to better understand future contracts, you know, so because we don't know whether or not we're going to be at high oil prices. And we did negotiate these, I believe, in good faith, nobody knowing that we were going to drop down this far. So in the future, should we be looking at contracts with zero COLAs, very little pay increases, and then look at it year by year based on oil prices or revenue so that we don't get to this position? I mean, is there other options like that, so that we're not offering one thing and then not able to necessarily keep it?
Through the chair, I think we certainly have in mind that as we negotiate these contracts in the future, there will be more flexibility, potentially some reopeners associated with oil prices as it changes, so that we've got a little bit more room to maneuver as things change. Yes.
And Mr. Chair, kind of maybe just extra information as we have another presentation, but I'd like to understand a little bit better not just the salaries but the steps, how much health insurance is paid by whom, so we get the full picture, you know, when you come back, because I think we're going to have these issues again. I mean, whether it's high or it's low, and I think everybody wants to make sure everybody's taken care of. The question is, and I guess the only other question would be, is that could someone go back to the unions and give them the option on keeping the COLA or saying they would prefer just to have the reductions and the departments choosing who they keep and who they don't keep?
And I see staff taking down some questions here, too. And then, again, this just is a more of an informational type and an introduction into this. So any in-depth questions you have for any in-depth information, submit to the chairs, and we'll make sure we get that, Representative Wilson, and all members.
Yeah, if we could just find out, though, if they could go back to the unions and get an answer from them, that may make the decision a lot easier.
You're in trouble.
Thank you.
Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and certainly some of the questions have been asked. But here, I don't even think we're helping you when we potentially approve something like this, and you just said that 12,200 people are in the queue in the next year to be negotiated. The message that we're sending is that we're not out of money, that we have enough money to fund, quote, keep this promise and continue on. And I'm seeing us going in the wrong direction. We're giving you, we're giving these employees the wrong message. And I guess really mine is more of a statement. And I do think that we should look at the benefits, and I do think that the steps and columns and the other, and so I'm glad that you're going to bring that forward as we continue. But I really want to make sure that folks get it, you know. I'm not going to ramble on. We've done it for the last 90 days, and thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Gaddis. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I've got some confusion about which of these contracts are in here. I mean, I do agree with Representative Sadler about the morale problems of removing a statutory COLA increase. But there are three types of union contracts. Those are the ones you haven't negotiated yet, and I understand those. Then there are the ones that were negotiated in the past, and I understand that those are funded in this budget. Then the third category of union contracts, which I don't understand whether they're in this budget or not, are the ones that have been negotiated but not yet approved by the legislature. And so are those also funded in this bill, the ones that the administration and also, I mean, I think that was mostly, if not all, the Parnell administration, but maybe some was the Walker administration. Are the union contracts that were negotiated but not yet approved by the legislature also included in here?
I don't think they're in.
Through the chair, we'll need to come back to you, but we believe that those are not in this budget. But I'll need to confirm that in this request.
Okay.
And, Commissioner, if we can get back, as Representative Guerra mentioned three different types of what he thought were union contracts, if we could get descriptions of those and maybe a past history of where we were several years ago and to the point we're at today, I think it's very important. And we see a comparative of salary increases for the last few years into where we got today, too, and probably how they would measure out to the private sector at the same time as far as increases go.
Just a follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you. I guess that one surprised me, not having gone through the budget yet. So just talking about the union contracts that have been negotiated in the past that had previously been approved, in the House-Senate Conference Committee budget that passed last week, for those unions who had previously negotiated contracts that were approved, were their COLAs removed in the budget that passed at the end of session?
Through the chair, my understanding is yes, that those COLAs were removed.
All right, thank you.
Representative Kozaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I almost want to pass just because I know we're going to talk about this a little bit more. I do want to ask, if we do decide to go forward with what we initially had in our original budget, and that would be to not fund these, how would the administration handle that? Would it be more likely that we would see people laid off, or do you have the tools at your disposal? Would you be able to basically go forward with what the legislative intent was, and that was to forego right now those particular increases?
Through the chair, the administration's request is that we honor the contracts, and therefore, if the language is there to honor the contracts, but the funding is not there, then each department will have to find an additional amount in savings, and there. Each department will use the tools at their discretion, but there undoubtedly will be additional layoffs in that scenario.
Okay, and then just to follow up, and this one I'm not going to ask for an answer now. As we go forward, I'd like to hear a little bit more. But how as we get a little bit of information on the past, I'd love to know what the expectation will be in the future. Do you expect to be able to handle the coming negotiations and just kind of give us a perspective of what to expect going forward? I'm not asking you to reveal stuff that's outside of what you would be negotiating, but just help us understand what we're going to be looking at in the future, if that's okay?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes, well that's kind of what we intended to do here, is to let them know what information we're going to need as we get into this. We're going to probably, on this one here, I imagine several days will be on just this one specific issue. Thank you, Commissioner. So, Pat, let's go back up, and we're just going to start at the top with the Department of Education, Early Development, and then we'll go through Transportation. Today we're just going to probably get through what we call the meat and potatoes section of the bill. We've got four versions of this. We've got, the additions into the operating budget that were requested by the governor. Then there was an education funding component to this legislation. There is bill. Union salary contracts, which we just did, and then Medicaid. We're going to be doing Medicaid next week, so we won't be doing that today. But if you've got questions on what you want to do, Representative Thompson is trying to put together the right team to answer those questions.
Mr. Chairman? Before we go into the meat and potatoes, I did hold my previous question in abeyance for Mr. Fisher's present. Thank you. Appreciate it. I just want to ask Ms. Pittman, has the governor committed to signing HB 72 as it stands with no line item vetoes? I just want to ask the question, what's the landscape going forward? Is that pretty much assumed by the administration that the bill that was passed will be the bill that signed into law and that this CS will be addendum to that? My first question, has the governor committed to signing HB 72?
The governor has not committed to signing anything. The current budget is an unfunded budget, and so there's absolutely no commitment.
Glad to get on the record. Thank you.
It's like every piece of legislation that's on this table, I guess.
So this isn't the budget.
So, Department of Education and Early Development, Commissioner, or Pat, did you have somebody here, or can you do this one?
Mr. Commissioner, can I just...
Representative Edgman?
Yes, I want to throw in a clarifying question since we've been doing that this afternoon. The intent of this bill, I think I heard Ms. Pitney say it, but didn't exactly say it, but the intent of this bill is for the governor to try to create a pathway towards creating a three-quarters vote that it needs, that we need in the House in order to have a CBR draw. Is that correct?
That is absolutely correct. Through the chair, Representative Edgman, that's exactly.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to put that on the record.
Somewhere in between, maybe.
Or somewhere
you're
in between.
You're just looking to hear that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's we're the appropriate body, and that's why we're here, is to try and work through this and gather some higher level information so we can get more in depth in this in the coming weeks. This committee will be meeting. So let's go start with page two. And again, if we can, we're just going to work through this through sections. So we go through education, get down to education, we'll go to services, or Department of Health and Social Services, go through that section. So education, Commissioner.
Chair Newman, starting on page two, there are two items in the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development, and as you know, education and early development was one of the absolutely hardest hit departments in the conference committee budget. That the non-formula components for education and early childhood development were decreased by 18 million dollars, a 31% decrease in general funds to the Department of Education and Early Childhood Development on the non-formula side. This is bringing these two programs back. These priority programs back would bring the decrease to the education and early childhood development by a decrease of 15 million, a 26% decrease. So to say that these budgets are increases, this is just bringing back some of the tremendous cuts that were made up to this point. And all of these items that are in this, with the exception of one, were in the governor's original budget. So this is not asking for anything that wasn't originally part of the governor's original budget, which also had a $250 million across agency reduction. So we're not talking about more money here. We're talking about reducing reducing a little bit less overall. So that those are, and there's just two programs, the Alaska Learning Network, which provides distance education to students across the state, mostly for the rural communities, provides those courses that are required for the APS scholarship. And then the pre-kindergarten grants, so to restore some of the pre-K programs that existed. So the next area, sorry.
So we do have a couple questions. Again, we've got some time issues that we're trying to deal with, so we can kind of keep questions very specific. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would argue that it is more money versus, and I guess it's a matter of slicing hairs, and I've had teenagers as well, and I'm not implying that you're a teenager, but we are adding money, and I think we really have to be truthful about that. This is an addition versus just a less reduction. And I guess I just want to make that statement, and I know as we're going through this, now that I realize it's essentially a compromise bill trying to get to the CBR, I understand what you're doing, but I did want to go on record and say it is an addition. Thank you.
I think we could probably mention that for every one of these then now, so we can get that one. Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I can read, so I know what each one of these are. What I'd like to hear is why these things throughout the whole budget. Why, I mean, I understand they were in the governor's budget, but there were other things that were taken out, so there should have been a reason for the priority and why we didn't exchange it for other monies, because we have no money. And so I want to understand, especially because with the Alaska Learning Network, for 5 years we've asked for it to be self-sustainable. It came with stimulus money. They've been put on notice for years that this needs to be self-sustainable and quit competing with other marketplaces, and it hasn't been. So I just want to know on each one of these why they were added, and if this is all we're looking at is up or down and no trading, why these rose to the top to add more money back into the budget.
Thank you, Representative Wilson.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this isn't an up or down. This isn't a no trading. This is a document to bring the sides together, to have the conversation so we can get to a funded budget. So with that, the prioritization are these are the items that the administration felt were cut and would cause more damage than necessary at this time. And again, Department of Education has under the unfunded budget a 31% decrease. With these add-backs, is at a 20, what did I say? Still a 26% decrease. So significant, a quarter of the funding out of that department. So this is bringing back just those things that will cause really serious damage.
It's safe to say everything that's in here is some things that the governor thought were important and should be added back into the budget.
Absolutely.
Representative Wilson.
Follow up. Okay. What I'm trying to hear, though, is these were vetted. Every one of these things in here were vetted by the subcommittees, and there were reasons that they were removed. Okay? And so I'm trying to understand why our subcommittees were wrong when they removed this, because that's basically what you're saying, is that we decreased it too much. And why these programs, what are they going to offer, what's going to be lost if they're not in there? And there isn't any trading, because I just understood the co-chair saying that we're looking at adding these things back in. Because I'll be honest with you, I don't need the administration to tell me how to come together with anybody. I think the legislature can do that on their own terms. That's why we have subcommittees and we've worked very hard. But what I am really trying to understand is, after the subcommittee process, why were they wrong to remove these? What will Alaskans lose because these things aren't in there, besides the statement of they were things that the governor wanted? Because that's all I'm hearing, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, yes, these are the priorities of the governors, and I'm carrying these priorities forward. And again, it is the right of this body, and we want the conversation.
Okay,
we'll dig in when we get the Commissioner of Education here and dig further in. We'll look at all the things that are in there, I guess, and we'll try and measure out what our priorities are. Mm-hmm.
So,
President Sather.
Thank you. Yep. Ms. Pitney, through the chair, the governor, before he was governor, said that there had to be a 16% cut in the state budget, that there was a fiscal crisis that was so dramatic there needed to be a 16% cut in the budget. What I see in front of me is not a 16% cut in the budget. It's a $94 million increase after the legislature has done its work, sitting around a table making the discussion, and you say that these increases reflect the governor's priorities. So how can you reconcile the dramatic shift in the governor's priorities from before he got elected to now? And the secondary question, how does adding spending constitute a tool for getting a funded budget?
So I will start with the Representative Newman.
If we can keep things, we're going to have a lot of philosophical questions.
Well, this is the time for it.
Did you have questions that are specific to the education funding here in these two issues? That's what we're trying to get through today. Sorry. But we'll have a, I mean, this is a very emotional thing. There's a lot of things. We passed a budget. We've worked hard on a budget. These are things the governor didn't agree with. So they're bringing them back for us to discuss further. So did you have things that are specifically to education on these issues?
I could draw a fine point. No, my question will stand, but we'll have more time later to get into the specifics. Right. I think we have one meeting today. So rather than dive deep down, I think my question stands. It'll rest.
And did you have a final response?
So through the chair, Representative Sadler.
That is.
Got to get it right.
To your first point, the governor did talk about 16%. It actually was before it was when oil prices were coming down and they hadn't yet bottomed out. And yes, there was a recognition that there was a problem. The 16% was over time. Even with this, if you go back and look at the items or go back and review the tapes, it was 16% over time. If you, this particular budget, including these items, is an 8% reduction in compared to last year's operating. 8% reduction. That's $365 million, $1 million a day. Okay.
What we need to do is to go through this. We've got the issues in front of us. These are the questions that are in front of us. These are issues. If we can get specific answers and questions on this, we're going to hear a lot more about what the governor's budget was, what we passed, and all those differences.
Perfect.
Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I got to say it again, and I don't mean to be difficult, but this is what the governor wants. This is the governor just wanting a conversation. We're going back to what the governor wants. This is extremely confusing for me. And I'm hearing on one end it's to start the conversation. I'm hearing on the other end it's because it's what the governor wanted in his budget. So I guess at the end of the day, is this to start a conversation or is this what the governor is essentially demanding / wants?
Maybe we get the governor to come back to one of our meetings.
Through the chair, Representative Gaddis, this is a document now in the legislature's court, and it does represent his priorities, but the governor is flexible to get to a funded budget. That's our goal. We need to get to a funded budget.
And you know, I don't know how many more times I need to say it. I understand. There was a governor, we passed the budget. Governor disagreed with the budget we passed. These are what he didn't agree with. We're going to look at them and see whether we agree with them or not, and we'll make our decisions on how we continue to move forward on. Did you have, is there any questions specifically on the education department? President Kerr?
Thanks.
On these two issues.
Just on Ackland, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm not the world's biggest interest in Ackland. It largely helps people outside my district, but I think it's important. And I heard the statement that this is something that came in from the federal stimulus, but didn't it come in and hasn't it been funded because it meets the former Governor Parnell's merit scholarship policy, which is for those students who don't have access to the courses that you need for merit scholarships, the Ackland program helps get them those programs. Am I misunderstanding the Ackland program?
So how about this? Can we just get some specific information on the Alaska Learning Network program that we can present to the committee, start, finish, full funding, where the money goes and how it goes, and where we started and where we're at maybe for the last few years? We've got all that for the last 10 years already at Ledge Finance, and then we can go from there.
I don't need all that. I'm just going to withdraw. I don't need them to torture themselves instead of a night to get all that information.
We're going to get into very in-depth discussions in every one of these.
Thanks. Yeah. I'll withdraw the question.
Yes.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. When we get into these in-depth, and the education was my subcommittee, and more importantly, you know, I certainly have some personal knowledge in some of these programs, and so I am hoping to get into them to try to determine why the governor chose that and what his reasoning was. I certainly haven't talked to him about it, so I'm hoping that we do have that conversation to try to determine. I certainly know why I took it out of the budget, so I just don't know why the governor wants to put it back in. So that's our ongoing conversation.
We'll get all that information, and we'll have a lot further discussions. We've got till 2:30 today to try and get through some of these meat and potato ones, because we had sometimes things that we have to deal with. So if we can get to Health and Social Services part here, we do have North Slope Gas Compensation, Troopers, Domestic Violence, Marine Highway, and University yet to go. So Department of Health and Social Services, frontline social workers, and some of these. We have Commissioner Davidson. And then Medicaid, again, Representative Thompson agreed to take over that portion of the discussion, and I think he's preparing to probably the week after next or so to try and get some people. So we'll get into that one.
Into next week.
So we can discuss Medicaid issues at that point.
Guyana, thank you, Mr. Yeah. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Davidson, Commissioner of the Department of Health and Social Services, and I'm also joined at the table with by Sana Eford, Assistant Commissioner. On page 2, for Children's Services, line 19, frontline social workers, the $1 million would fund 7 positions using the CHIP funds. On line 20, the family preservation grants adds or restores $330,500 to this grant program. The Family Preservation Grant Program is a program that really prevents children from out-of-home placements. With regard to the first line, I should have done that one first, sorry. The frontline social workers, unfortunately, we have a record number of children in out-of-home placements. When we testified before this committee earlier, we indicated that we had 1,400 kids, Alaska children, in out-of-home placements. We are now at over 1,500 children in out-of-home placements. I'm sorry,
25 now.
Okay.
It's 2,500 now.
I'm sorry, we have, I apologize. I was $1,000 off. We have 2,400, we said we had 2,400 children in out-of-home placements, and now 2,500 children in out-of-home placements.
So if you can just go through each one of the items, then we'll go to questions.
Sure. Under the next lines 21 through 27, these reverse interagency transfers, reversing interagency transfers. For public affairs, it's $50,000. Commissioner's office is $125,000. Administrative support services, $875,000. And information technology services, $125,000.
$125,000?
Yes. So again, line 22 would be $50,000. Line 23, $125,000. Line 24, $875,000. Line 26 is $125,000. To get to the total of $1.175 million. Lines 28 through 30 are reverse and unallocated reduction in the amount of $2.218 million.
Supervisor Sadler.
Thank you. Ms. Commissioner Davidson, you said on line page 2, line 19, the $1 million for frontline social workers. You said you could fund 7 jobs using the CHIP money. Could you explain what the CHIP money is, please?
Yeah, let's not use the acronyms.
The CHIP money.
I know children's, you know, insurance program, but how to get there? What's the source of it?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the CHIP stands for Children's Health Insurance Program, and over a number of years through the federal program, the federal Children's Health Insurance Program, states were able to receive bonuses for CHIP, for their CHIP enrollments, for being able to basically get bonuses from the federal government. Those programs are no longer authorized. That doesn't happen anymore. And over those appropriations that happened in the prior administration, those funds were used for a variety of purposes. There is a fund balance that is available, and this would use $1 million of that to be able to fund frontline social workers to be able to deal with that additional demand because of the record number of children in out-of-home placements.
Okay. So, Commissioner, is this a long-term funding source?
Mr. Chairman, no, it is not.
But we're looking at a 1 or 2 year funding source where we're getting $1 million of other funds, federal funds, for these to put in the frontline social workers. Then after that, that $750,000 or $1 million, it was $750,000, will be embedded in the Department of Health and Social Services budget for these personnel.
Mr. Chairman, it is our hope that working with a number of our partners throughout the state, we would like to be able to transition some programs that are currently within the department by working with partners, specifically with some tribal partners who are in a position to be able to provide services. That a program called 4E, and maybe I can provide more detail to the committee later. But it would allow us, just as in we do in tribal health, by partnering with tribal organizations that allow some of those resources to be additional revenues to come in from the federal government. We also have those same opportunities in this realm as well. And so we would like to be able to work over the next year or two to be able to address those, to be able to try and get more tribal health organizations to be able to do 4E programs and to be able to reverse this trend.
So if we can get some information on how you're going to supplant this and hopefully maybe some other funds, that would probably be some pretty good information that this committee would like to look at. Representative Thompson.
Thank you. In the original budget, I think there was $2 million in federal money, and it would add 20 frontline social workers. Through the conference committee, that got reduced to about $350,000 and just 3 frontline workers. I see this is going to add 7 frontline workers, so we would have, with the combined conference committee and this, it would put us at 10 new frontline social workers. Is that correct?
Yes.
Through the chair, Representative Thompson, yes.
And then
I believe Representative Sadler put in enough for 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Representative Thompson.
And I just wanted to follow up that it did say in there that that money was not expected to be continuing in future years, so that was a concern. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sadler.
Thank you. We heard earlier from Ms. Pitney that no, there is no guarantee that the funding for frontline social workers in HB 72 conference committee will indeed be funded, so this could be it. So it's not clear to me actually whether this is in addition to the positions that were funded in HB 72 or not.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, yes, this is the money that is in for frontline social workers in 72 is supported by the administration, and this is because of the difficulty of this situation that the state is facing. This is proposed. This is on top of.
The conference committee accepted the committee recommendation that came out of Health and Social Services, chaired by Representative Sadler, for $250,000 for 3 frontline social workers. This would add in another $1 million for 7 more frontline social workers. Does this also include all the related equipment that they have to have?
Mr. Chairman, it would include some.
So we're going to have to get a measurement out on that, because when I was doing the Health and Social Services budget, we put in $1.5 million for 10 frontline social workers, but we did 7 or so, and then use the rest of the remainder to try and get some salary increases to get some of those people to stay there a little bit longer. And then there was another, I'm going back 3-4 years now, $348,000 for equipment purchasing to support them. Is that right, Sana? Somewhere in there?
Representative Newman, that's correct.
Thank you. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to make clear, are we talking about certified social workers or are we talking about caseworkers? Because there's a very big difference.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, this would include a variety of positions, not only certified social workers or licensed social workers, but also in some cases it may be another kind of frontline worker, depending on what would be what we think is most needed in that area.
Mr. Chair, I like the separation because we're using social workers here, and most caseworkers, for different reasoning, is not certified social workers. So I would like to know what exactly we're funding at what level. Thank you.
And four, Ms. Efford, you weren't on the record, so we need to make sure you're there.
Yes, Representative Newman, for the record, my name is Sana Efford. I'm the Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Health and Social Services.
Sana Efford. After 5 years, I should know. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I totally understand this budget is a sort of a kickstart effort at getting us to work together, and I appreciate that. But just and
what the heck was that?
That was
that's your words.
Are you serious?
Okay, we're gonna.
Chair, I need to ask a question.
James, do we have questions that regarding questions. Specifically the Department of Health and Social Services?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want to say something. You allowed members a lot of leeway in this room and during this period trying to keep them yes. So when Representative Guerra asks a question and makes a little statement, he's basically ruled out of order. I would just ask that you give us the same courtesy that you give every member.
And I believe we have Representative Guttenberg.
Mr. Chair, I do want to ask my question.
Go ahead, Representative Guerra. And I've asked several times, and the chair is getting a little bit tired of going back and forth here. We can ask direct questions, please.
Mr. Chair, I'm trying, and I feel the tension level is higher than I wish it was in this room. So,
direct question, please.
Thank you. Commissioner, there was a study maybe 3-4 years ago. You're probably familiar with the workload study. It said OCS at that time was somewhere around 45-50 staff short of being able to meet its needs, and from then the number of foster youth went from somewhere around 1,800. It was down to 1,700 at one point, but it went from somewhere around 1,800, now it's 2,500. So we were roughly 50 short. We added 13 last year, I think, but now the number of foster youth is up to 2,500. These 7 workers won't solve the shortage problem at OCS. Is that fair to say, or is that not fair to say?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, that's correct.
So if we can get caseload studies and stuff like that that are available for this, we can look at this and examine the need for this. That would be good.
We'd be happy to provide that, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Commissioner Davidson, you just said that you're expecting to add about 10 frontline social workers through the money that was appropriated, that might be appropriated through House Bill 72. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I believe that through House Bill 72, 3 positions were added, and the proposal before you today on page 2, line 19, would add 7 positions.
Okay. And the OMB Director Pitney said that there's no commitment on the administration's part to sign HB 72. So are you counting on 4, or are you counting on 7?
Can you speak a little louder?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The siren is making it difficult to work in here, isn't it? I just want to reconcile the difference between Ms. Pitney saying that you did not anticipate getting funding through HB 72, and you just told me that you are. Help me reconcile those two, please.
Take your best shot.
Yep.
So through the chair, Representative Sadler, this particular program is supported by the administration. The funding that is in SB 72 is supported for this program, is supported by the administration. This is additive to the money in SB 72.
Rock on. Okay.
Who am I? That's more for you.
Mr. Chair? Can I ask a clarification? So it almost, maybe, so it almost seems like the 172, since it's still kind of exists, I guess you say. It hasn't been vetoed. There has been no action that's taken on it. Really almost, this is more kind of like an addendum to the budget that's there. If for some reason the governor were to choose to not to veto it because there's going to be a time frame, would this bill then have to become all of everything, the rest of the bill plus what we have here? I think that's probably what some of the confusion that people are having right here is we're looking at this and trying to figure out what we're seeing here, and then how does that differ from, because there's already another bill and it just seems small. Can you help? Am I kind of in the right direction in trying to hopefully sort why there's maybe some confusion here?
So through the chair, Representative Pruitt, that's a good question. There's been two steps between passing SB 72 and this particular version. So SB 72 is passed but unfunded. So it isn't. It doesn't serve as of a valid budget. So the administration submitted a whole new budget starting essentially from the conference committee with these changes. In a very short order, Representative Newman's staff and Ledge Finance said, let's narrow the conversation to the changes, and so then created, you're right, this addendum that mirrored any of the changes from the conference committee to that full new piece of legislation that we put on the call, the administration put on the call. So this is an addendum with the assumption that the CBR vote happens and it slides in. So it's a point for a compromise discussion to get the 3/4 vote to get a funded budget.
Well, and that's for discussion. This is the Senate and the House passed Senate Bill 72. It's sitting in the governor's desk. Governor disagreed with some of those things and introduced a new piece of legislation to add these other things into the operating budget. We'll look at them.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Wilson, then we're going to go through the other departments. Is it?
That's fine.
Is it the department?
But just from what Ms. Pitney just said, so the governor actually submitted a new operating budget.
Yep.
He did not submit just these changes. I mean, these changes are the increases in it. But he has submitted a new operating budget. So I just want to put this on the record. First of all, I want to make sure that's clear. So his intent before we got this CS was to put forward a new operating budget. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, the intent was to get a compromise discussion started to get a funded budget.
So follow up? So his intent wasn't to put a new operating budget forward, correct? I mean, it's got to be one way or the other. Yes, he did, or no, he didn't.
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that was the mechanism to create the conversation to get the compromise started to get to the end point of a funded budget. That was the mechanism that was chosen by the administration at that time. The administration accepts this approach versus the entire bill.
Let's get to that discussion further. Is there any more on the health and social services?
Yes.
Representative Wilson.
Mr. Chair, I guess.
Please.
Yeah.
I'm the chair. Let me talk.
Go right ahead.
We passed a House bill. We passed a Senate bill. We passed an operating budget. It's sitting on the governor's desk. What he decides to do with it is his choice. I think there's a lot of us who felt that it was a budget that had it at a mechanism there to have a fully funded budget. And for whatever reason, if the governor decides passed or not, the governor introduced another piece of legislation, House Bill 1001. This is the same version of House Bill 101, but it's cleaner to look at. So this is a separate piece of legislation.
I understand that, Mr. Chair, and just for a moment, and I know you're tight for your time, and this will be my last comment. If what we're looking at is this CIS and increasing it, I will not vote to increase it. And, you know, I don't care if there's a CBR vote or what there is, but if all the piece of legislation we're looking at, I did my homework. I listened to all the subcommittees, not just my own. We well vetted these things that are in this purpose of it. Not having the opportunity, if we're looking at just the CS, to possibly exchange it for other things that are in the budget, this doesn't start the conversation for me. It ends it, and I just want to make sure that's on the record.
I understand. You can vote yes or no wherever you need to do, like if another piece of legislation. But we've had a lot of leeway. I'd like to get the discussion on what we're having. Representative Sadler?
My question echoes that of Representative Wilson. It's not clear to me whether the presumption is that HB 72 will be signed into law and that this is complementary to that, or whether the House Bill 1001, of which this is a CS, is designed to replace it. It is not clear to me. You've not made it clear. Somebody watching this is not going to know either. So this is a bit of an exercise.
You want to explain North Crow's slope gas crystallization?
So in the Department of Natural Resources, there was an increment requested to pursue the gas commercialization contracts. It was requested at over $13 million. It was only partially funded. It was partially funded on Alaska oil and or on the in-state gas pipeline funding. This brings the request back to the total request that was in the governor's budget. As you know, the a gas pipeline and commercializing our gas resources is one of our biggest revenue opportunities that we have. This is a high priority of the governor's.
Department of Public Safety.
Department of Public Safety. There are two items. One is restoring some of the aircraft section for the wildlife troopers. This is allowing for helicopter service out of Fairbanks. The second item is restoring the half of the Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault funding. So this was originally in 15. This is a $3 million item. And in the governor's original budget, it was cut to $1.5 million and moved from the governor's office into Department of Public Safety to be more aligned with the Council on Domestic Violence. This restores back to the governor's original request. Our state has a significant issue with domestic violence and sexual assault, and these are the resources that allow us to provide prevention programs and move the dial on that problem our state faces.
President Townsend.
On that $1.5 million, where is that money going to?
That, through the chair, Representative Thompson, that funding actually goes to the council now. It used to go to the governor's office.
Yes.
And it's focused on prevention. It still is focused on prevention. We just wanted to align all the resources together.
This isn't the one that went through the Anchorage Police and Anchorage Department, is it?
Right. Through the chair, Representative Thompson, no, this is not. That was a capital budget request that went directly
a grant
that went directly from the state to Anchorage.
Mr. Chair, Pat, just because a lot of these numbers, we had them all memorized a week ago, and now we're starting again. The $1.5 million you're trying to add back to the domestic violence and sexual assault prevention program, this was the governor's original proposal, and then it became a $3 million cut, and now you're moving it back to the governor's original proposal. Is that right?
Through the chair, Representative Guerra, yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, just clarify that. So the CDVSA's budget would be $3 million again. Is that correct? I just want to amplify.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the CDVSA budget would be 1.5 instead of zero.
Council on Domestic Violence.
The prevention focus of it. The Council on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault has a base budget that this is not part of.
But there's addition. There is other funds.
There are other funds. The council has other operating funds.
Make sure
that are primarily going to fund grants for shelters.
Well, Commissioner, when this comes back in front of us, let's get a full accounting of the Council on Domestic and Sexual Violence accounts. And I'd also like to get some information on their prosecution rates and how they do this and how effective they've been with this program. So we've got 5 minutes. Let's get to the Marine Highway System if we can real quick. Commissioner Lucan, welcome back.
Mark Lucan, Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. So this increment, line 21 on page 3, would allow us to maintain our commitments to our customers, which is...
A little louder, Mark. Move the mic closer.
So this increment would allow the Marine Highway System to maintain our commitments to our customers based on the schedule that was published in October of 2014.
Representative Thomas.
Commissioner Lucan, so this is to allow present reservations to take care of those people?
Yes, Representative Thomas.
My curiosity then is this a one-time increment, because this is just to allow this year's reservations?
Representative Thompson, I think our stance and the governor's stance has been all along to fund the Marine Highway Transportation System to allow us to meet the schedule that was published in October of 2014. But
go ahead and finish there.
But, and I guess this was kind of the end of my remarks, but what I would say is as we prepare for the FY17 budget, we're going to work with OMB to publish a much more conservative schedule that will be in line with a budget that we would expect to be funded at going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
What's the total appropriation to the Alaska Marine Highway System? 140 million?
147 million.
I can check my phone.
$7 million reduction is 0.5%. So you feel that can't be absorbed into the department?
It will be absorbed, you know, as we've also testified before, it will be absorbed, but it will be absorbed through service cuts that will happen starting 1 July.
Okay, well, let's get some more information on where the funding appropriations and the allocations, those appropriations go through. So we've got that to look at the Marine Highway System and routes and things like that. There was a discussion that we had earlier with some of your people who work with the Marine Highway System about routes. If they were on a roadway system, why would you not maybe reduce some of the routes on the roadway system where you can drive to another port as opposed to routes where there is no road? We asked for that report back, and I don't think there was a whole lot of reduction in those. So,
well, Mr. Chairman, again, you know, we can explore all of those options in the coming budget cycle.
Be asking questions.
But again, you know, we're basing, you know, this on what the current schedule is that was published, and therefore the reservations that have already been made.
Thank you. Let's get to the university real quick. We got 3 minutes.
So the university request is adding back $7 million of the $29 million reduction that was included in the Senate, in the conference committee budget. It was $29 million that excluded the all salary funding. So this restores $7 million, and then, of course, the union salary funding that's part of you know, part of the request in the contracts is also included. So, but this restores $7 million. There was a $29.8 million reduction at the conference committee from last year, 8%. And this this action in this bill would bring the reduction to an $18.9 million reduction of negative 5% straight-up revenue reduction on general fund.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Could you restate? I'm sorry, this is this $7 million add-back is for employee salaries at the university. Is that what I hear you saying?
Through the chair, no, Representative Sadler. In this, the contract section, well, at the bottom of page 3, going into page 4. So there is funding for union contracts for state agencies and the university within the contract funding. This is $7 million additional funding to the university to restore programs that will otherwise have to be cut. The current cut at the university under the conference committee is $29.9 million, an 8.1% reduction. And at this post-conference committee budget would have it at an $18.9 million reduction or a 5% reduction.
And could you offer any more details as to which programs this would fund again, the $7 million?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, the regents are working through all of the reductions that they're going to have to make. This would put of the programs they're going to have to make many, many cuts to address $18.9 million reduction. These would be the seven on that would be the next $7 million that would have to be cut wouldn't have to go on. Those discussions are ongoing at the university. There are particular program, you know, there's news reports now of the programs that are coming out. The university would be happy to say where they are with the priority of the programs.
I'd expect is the offerings within the university and your prioritization of which you think are the most important that you have to have, what it costs to fund them. Let's look at the UGF funds that are going to them and other funds, and then come back and prepare that discussion. I'm going to wrap this up here because it's time. We've got things we have to finish up. But, again, this body worked pretty darn hard to address the budget deficits that face this state. We made a lot of tough decisions. Went through committee processes to do that. Passed it over to the Senate. They went through their committee process, scrubbed it down. Their finance committee worked it over, came up with another $10 million in reductions. We proposed that, came over, the House voted on that, sent to conference committee report, came out with numbers, except for the education funding that was added in, would have been lower than what the Senate had come out. Governor, we passed that on, passed both bodies, passed that legislation. It didn't have a three-quarter vote to get the minority support. That's basically where it came from. On that was short by one vote. I'll just say that it was short by one vote from getting a three-quarter vote to get access to the CBR, which would have been allowed it to be a fully funded budget. That was submitted to the governor. The governor put in another piece of legislation, called us back into special session, put in another piece of legislation as House Bill 101.
1001.
We did a committee substitute, so cleaned it up so people could read it a lot clearer. And that's where we're at right now with a separate piece of legislation in front of us to look at that. I think it's going to be a tough sell to this body and the work that we've done. I ask you to get your information ready. I think that you've heard a lot of questions from this committee, and you're going to hear a lot more. And we're going to continue this discussion as we continue on down the road. Thank you, Will.
Jim. Thank you. Next meeting.
We will send out notice of our next meeting when we do that. We adjourn.